Welcome to the Talk Doesn't Cook Rice podcast with myself, John Staskowski, and Danny Massaro, where we explore thought-provoking concepts and provide practical insights to enrich modern life. We hope you enjoy this episode.
This is something. This is nothing. This is solid. This is space. Between yourself and the world of nature outside you.
Right, Danny, we are back in the saddle for a bit of burnout. We're going to focus our chat around a guy who is actually still alive. A lot of the people we speak about are often dead, aren't they? But it's quite nice to speak about a philosopher who is still alive called Byung-Chul Han, who is a Korean origin but spent a lot of his life in Germany. So a Korean-German philosopher who is quite trendy at the minute. He's having a bit, not a renaissance, but he's having a moment where he's quite trendy on YouTube and places like that, just tapping into some of the books he's written. So he himself is very on the down low. You don't really see him anywhere. Does very few interviews. I don't think I've ever seen a video of him actually speaking, talking about his philosophy and his ideas. But he's written quite a few books now. I think actually maybe more than 20 different books, but they're all really short, little concise, maybe 60, 70 pages, kind of in and out. He doesn't waffle. He doesn't outstay his welcome, just pointing out some of the issues he sees in society. And probably his most famous book today is called The Burnout Society, which is what we're going to chat around today. And it's one of those that just fits in with a lot of the stuff that we've talked about over the months and years now, I suppose, on this podcast. So he's a nice one to add in. So I'll just start with a little outline on how he sees the history of society and why that sets up some of the modern issues that we've perhaps got today, not least burnout. So basically, he starts The Burnout Society, that book, talking about how if you think back through time, most societies in history, people were controlled by what he calls negative power. So basically, things like prohibition, lots of rules, lots of tight controls on what you can and can't do. So no, you can't do that. I know you shouldn't be doing that. Very much negative in that sense, so what you can't do. But Han's basically saying in the Burnout Society that in a Western capitalist society that we have now, most control is through positive power. So this new paradigm, that's basically telling us that we should always be doing something. So you must constantly be on the move, constantly working, constantly consuming. And whatever it is that you want to be in this world, you can be it. So if anyone ever tells you, no, you can't do that, you shouldn't do that, it's like the power now is don't listen to them. You're in charge. You're in the driver's seat of your life. You can be anything or anyone you want to be. So we no longer live in that society of prohibition and limitation. That means we've now entered this, what he calls the society of achievement. So this notion that we're just compelled towards action at all time. And people start now feel pretty uneasy. They just can't sit still. You can't focus or pay any attention to something that matters for too long because it's like, no, I've got to keep moving. Got to keep like moving. What's next? What's next? And one of the things he says around that is like, look, people just never let themselves be bored anymore. No one's bored anymore because it's like, oh, well, I've got to fill my time. I've got to be doing something. Constantly on the move, constantly consuming. And the last thing you want to be is idle in this modern world. So that's how he sets out, or he starts off in the Burnout Society book. And it goes from there into some of the issues. But I'll bring you in now, Danny, just to see how you initially feel about Han, Burnout Society, and just get us set up.
Yeah, the why just sprung to mind. Mickey Flanagan, the comedian, who says on Sundays his wife, she gets itchy, says, and we have to go purchasing now. He said it's the new hobby, purchasing, got to be busy. He says, where I love doing proper F all. Yeah. He said, you know, and then he goes on to explain the art of doing F all, and I would not be on. It just came to mind. And the only way he can get that nowadays is watching the kettle boil and running a bath. It's the only time he can like legitimately get like dead time.
Even then though, your proper people get their phone out, won't it? It's like, oh God, I've got 34 seconds here. The kettle's boiling. I better check Twitter. I better see if I've had any email.
No one just sits on the toilet, you know, and you know, it's like extra long sat there going through the scrolling and stuff. So you know, the toilet break is now the moment of bliss, you know, rather than just going outside and relaxing, or maybe, I mean, I know that was linked to smoking, wasn't it? It was like smokers, right? It was the only time that they could get that bit of a break from the incessant sort of pace of achievement and striving and getting things done was to go and have a fag break. And some said that having a drag of a cigarette was the only time they took a deep breath in their lives, you know, so it wasn't just the nicotine. But yeah, this for me, it's been really interesting because I know we covered it in our group as well. And I, as a sort of personality, when we touched on that, I am like probably a typical achiever. Growing up in the 80s, different times, you know, it was probably starting this type of, you know, neoliberalism, isn't it? It's capitalism and get going and make money and move on and you can better yourself. And basically the power is within you to improve yourself. So you get on your bike and get moving on. And in terms of our last podcast, Spiral Dynamics, it's that orange mindset, isn't it? Of like, forget the rules you're under by the government and by the religions, you know, and the blue type, the blue stuff, like bend the rules for your own benefit, go back to a sort of selfish position. It's not about the collective. Race to the top. You're in competition. And within that, then if everyone races to the top, the benefits of that, the trickle down economics of that will be that everybody will ultimately benefit because we're all creating things and so on. It was kind of a good theory. But what I noticed with that was, it, you know, it moves society on and so on, so forth, but the pressure comes on internally. And when we talked in at the very beginning on the Sartre podcast and the existential one about a lot of existentialism can be broken down into I am what I am, but I am what I am not yet. And I think, so I am, who am I? Am I who I am? Or am I my potential self? The becoming part of me, the development side of me. Now, you would expect that to be over towards the becoming in something like being a professional athlete or maybe a traditional business person who was trying to get their business up. So you're always setting goals and going up. But what kind of happened? That professional athlete mentality, in a way, started to drip into everyday life. Yeah. Everybody became like a professional project of themselves. Not everybody. You know, I've had builders working on my house all week, and even the main guy who owns the company might be a bit like that. But I know the guys who've been doing the work, they're very, what you might call, down to earth. And I just do my job, get paid, use my arms, use my legs. I don't really use my brain that much. And there's nothing wrong with that. I get paid. I have my routine. My family's good. What's the problem with that? But a lot of us in business and work and with the internet and with technology, you kind of had to get going, and the market for forced you to get yourself sort of onwards and upwards, these types of sayings linked in with positivity. I'm sure you'll mention, you know, it was, you have to be positive. There's lots out there. You can go for it and make yourself great. And to be fair, like, I was a sucker for that. Late 2000s, I thought, I've got to get going here. I've got to wake up. So I started studying mental technologies, you know, psychology, neuro-linguistic programming, coaching things, reading all the books that were coming out. I mean, if you go along my bookshelves downstairs, it is literally, everything's mainly about self-improvement. You know, there's so many books. You can't afford the luxury of a negative thought. That was one of the first things I bought. Relentless. I mean, a lot of that were to try and make it in sport. So arguably that's quite cool because you're trying to go up the hierarchy and be the best and improve. It links more naturally to goal setting and winning and so on. But it does drip into life. So yeah, I think what for me, this is really interesting. And I think the listeners will be interested in it, all three of them.
See, we're not achievement subjects. We're not looking for big audiences. We do it for the love. That's why we're doing it. He actually calls it, Han. It's interesting that you mentioned like your bookshelf and like that genre, that self-help genre sort of rose in line with a lot of this growth of the achievement society, the burnout society, didn't it? And it became a thing to almost regulate that self-improvement that people were doing. So Han, in the book, he calls it the achievement subject. So everyone now is, in his eyes, an achievement subject, which basically means that you yourself have become a project to work on. So you can't just be you and go through life and just be you. Like, no, you are now your own project. So you've constantly got to be working on yourself, essentially. You've got to be reinventing, refashioning, constantly becoming something more. You can't ever just be happy and sit still and be content. It's like, no, you've always got to be bigger, better, stronger, faster, all that stuff. And that's what he calls the achievement subject. And he very much likens it to, it's like, rather than being a subject, it's like we're subjugating ourselves now. It's like you're almost like cracking the whip on yourself. It's not that someone like your boss at work's doing it, or I don't know, maybe like a pushy parent or something. It's like, no, it's now like you're doing it on yourself. Like you're cracking the whip on yourself to be this project that you need to keep improving. And it's just not like it was back in the day. You can't really now just have a like you the builders you were talking about. Yeah, lots of people do, but also a lot of people, you can't just have a 9 to 5. You can't just do a standard 35 40 hour week, go in, do your 9 to 5, pick up your money, have a couple of holidays a year, you know, like maybe do a bit of sport on the weekend. It's like you used to be able to do that, but now it's all about hustle culture. And like you've always got to have like your iron in a few different fires and stuff, and there's always something more that you're doing, gig economy, side projects, all that sort of stuff constantly going on. And it's part of this constant transformation, overachieving, all that's in there. And self-help books, just going back to what you said, it's like that's part of that. They're sort of there driving you to, it's like, no, if there's a problem, don't be blaming the system you're in, don't be blaming capitalism, you're the problem. So it's you. Like if you're struggling, if you're tired and you're feeling run down and a little bit like, God, I can't keep up with this, don't start questioning the system. It's you. You just need to optimize yourself better. And that's where self-help comes in. And it's like, it's pushing that agenda, isn't it? It's always the problem is with you, not the bigger society that you're a part of. So that's the achievement subject that he's like, God, there's just loads of that now.
I see that as well in these apps at the moment as well. If you're not sleeping well, it's your problem. You've not had the right food. You've had too much caffeine. This is wrong. This, you know, or so on. So this is how even your sleep has become functional. If you're not fit, it's because of this. If you've not got good skin, it's because you're not using this product and you're having too much of that product. But everything is your fault. Right? If you're stressed, it's your fault. If you're not happy, it's your fault. If you're not winning something, that's ultimate. There's no sense of like, well, that's just how my cards have been dealt, and it's not in that area of my life. I just can't really do much about it. No problem. It's no. You don't think like that. You're a loser. You know, you're lazy. You're doing it wrong. You know, there's a book or a podcast or an app for everything. Yesterday, my friend showed me one for long COVID now. And it's this app that's like, it tells you how much energy everything is. And he was explaining to me that like, this lady who he'd met had said, oh, when I go shopping at the supermarket, that takes this much energy from me. And when I visit my mum, unbelievably, for an hour, it takes this much energy from me. So what I've now started to do, I only visit my mum for half an hour and I only go shopping twice a week because on my app, it says taken this much energy I'm allowed in a day because I've got long COVID. So basically, not only are you outsourcing to an app like about what quality of your life is, you are basically blaming yourself that I'm spending too much energy doing these things, even if it's true or not, obviously it's a load of rubbish probably, but it's just that mindset of there's a fix to it somewhere and it's probably on me. There's so much psychological sort of possibility that if you just think a bit differently and then act a bit differently, you can fix all your problems. And so therefore the underlying thing is, if you don't do that, then you've caused it all yourself. And that's what, you know, so it sounds flippant what we're saying, but I've seen that a lot. I think I've also seen it where when parents are doing this a lot with everything in their lives, spinning all the plates to a high level, I think the children are looking at that going, well, that's just what normal life is it? You never get ill. You're super fit. You're a brilliant businesswoman. You've got loads of mates. We've got a great house. It's like, so imagine growing up with that pressure. It's like, oh my God, ultimately, the world is telling me as I'm growing up, if everything doesn't go right, it's my own individual fault.
Yeah.
Not like I was thrown in, like, it's okay. The people I admire have got problems. They're not brilliant at everything. They cut corners there. They're rubbish at that. They're a bit overweight there, but they're good at that. But then they do, you know, that at least leaves you some room, doesn't it, to be a bit average, you know, and also to be a bit of a victim sometimes and go, oh, otherwise you're holding way too much freedom and responsibility on your shoulders, which is existentialism, and what Sartre said, anxiety is freedom and responsibility. So actually need people to take it off you sometimes, instead of the modern world tells you almost everything is down to you.
Yeah.
Now, I asked a mate yesterday a genuine question. I sent him a message, who I know who's into things. And this is what I asked him. I said, do you think that had you been born into a strong socialist time and worked a physical 9-to-5 job, such as was more common in the 60s and 70s, and being in this less entrepreneurial world of psychological positivity and options, you think it would have been less mentally taxing for you being alive? To me, mate, you know, and he just put massive yes. And then I said, oh, do you blossom in the constant menu of opportunities? Less physical work, more self-PR and exchanging of ideas and psychological trade. And he put probably yes as well, but I would prefer the latter. Now, this particular friend, he talks a lot about these new mental disorders as well, ADHD and all these other things. And one of Han's suggestions was that a lot of these new mental disorders that are knocking around and since the 21st century that we're seeing a lot could possibly be being nudged along and even made worse by people having too many ideas, too much freedom, too much thinking. You know, any conversation is like 2 minutes away from a business idea.
Yeah.
Well, we could make money out of this. It's like, no, we're just talking. We're not really doing it. No. You get, like, the brain is like fizzing all the time with potential and opportunities and ways which you could make it work, because you've read some books and they've tell you not to give up and do this, and you, Steve Jobs, and you could be this, you could be that, you could go there. Yeah, maybe I could quit my job and just be and own a shop and then do that part. So it's good, because there's opportunities and you're less of a slave to the dominant system, but it's bad if you go too far the other way. And I think people need sometimes just some relief for people to say, it's not your fault, just do that, you know.
So he's like, yeah, well, he talks about mindset with regards to that and that notion of, yeah, so if you're struggling with something, basically it's your fault, or that's how society now treats it. It's your fault, so you've got to sort it out. You're in charge of you, the project. So basically just optimize harder, basically. It's everything's that, which is where the apps and stuff come, isn't it? Right, I can track this, I can do that, and it makes it, everyone's into that objective, rational data, aren't they? And it's like, right, that's concrete stuff I can improve now. Well, I can get my sleep from a 6.3 to a 6.9 now, so I'm constantly just, it feeds it all that stuff. But he also talks about the mindset around, he calls it this emergence of self-referential optimism. So basically he's like saying that it's pretty much like a religion now, that you have to just be optimistic all the time. And it's like, whether that's grounded in any like real lived reality or not, it's just like, no, like that just should be your default, always be optimistic. Not because you've actually got something concrete to look forward to, perhaps, but just for the sake of it. And he's like, this is a bit of a mindset myth that we've now got, that's the only thing holding you back from true success and nirvana and all this, is you've just not been optimistic enough. You don't want it enough. You know, you don't believe in it enough. It's all that stuff. And he's like, even that's inevitable, that's going to lead to burnout and just collapse. And you can't possibly keep up with it. Your physiology, your body can't physically keep up with that level of mental optimism. So things like, you remember there's a lot of, or it's getting more popular. I think it was The Secret, the book, wasn't it, a few years ago, that was very, just this like law of attraction type thing of like, just visualize it and it'll come. Like, you'll manifest your thoughts, basically. If you believe it hard enough, that will just become your reality and come true. And Han saying, look, that's sort of like dripped into the broader society now of like, yeah, you've just got to be optimistic all the time. And he just sees it as part of it. It's just like, it's impossible to live with that sort of pressure all the time, because inevitably life is going to have dark moments and things are going to go wrong. You're going to have bad luck and shit's going to happen, isn't it? And it's like, he's like, yeah, but don't get down. Just be optimistic. And that's just relentless for human beings to try and keep up with. It leads into that. He calls it like a toxic climate of overachievement, positivity, and that's just leading into this burnout epidemic, which is tied into like a lot of the things you were saying around things like ADHD, depression, bipolar disorder, all these modern maladies. He massively ties it into that. this like sickness that people are getting mentally, it's all to do with this like just overly optimistic, positive, you're a project, keep going, keep getting better. And it's just like, you can't handle it. There's no way that doesn't end in tears.
Yeah. As a coach myself, and as you know, someone who tries to help people, I've been aware of my optimism, my personal optimism and positivity. And now overall, again, being an achiever type person, it's fit me quite well, but it is a hard act to follow. It can be relentless. It's like, oh, I don't, you know, like Danny's sort of saying, oh, I know you lost the match and I know this, but, you know, don't worry. And, you know, all the phrase was, it's not failure, it's just feedback. All them strap lines and onwards and upwards and we move on. And it's all learning, it's all progress, and it's all part of the, you know, it's all part of the sort of weird spiral of improvement and all this. And I suppose ultimately sort of like not allowing for negatives, you know, you're not allowing for it. No, it's just all going to be shit. And it's like, now I know that's a default in me. That's my own thing. But as I've got more effective, I think the people I talk to know now that if they want to be in a bad place and feel like victims and it's not fair, up to a point, I'll go with them and agree and say, right, it is crap and we don't know and it might be bad and this might not be a good thing that you lost today. I used to say it's going to be great feedback. Might have been better had you won. Yeah, rubbish, isn't it? And like hold that pain or that misery a little bit and get used to it and be sad and be upset and be a bit fed up. And to see, it's for me, it's quite hard because it's counterintuitive because I'm pragmatic. I want to get on and fix it. There's no time like the present and all that type of stuff. You know, all these phrases are there and they're popular. And sometimes when I say these things around friends and other people, you know, if they're of the achievement sort of way, they like that because it picks them up. And it's like you get back on the horse quick. And whilst you're back on the horse, you're avoiding pain, aren't you, I suppose? Because you don't want to wallow too much in pain, but you don't also want to wallow too much in, bask too much in optimism, you know, kind of thing. So it's a tricky one, but I've started to see a lot more that, yeah, sometimes I've had a few players lately, it's in our squash season, for example, it's coming towards the end, but the big two events are at the end. And if they've not paced themselves and they've been battling it out all year, this can become a real burnout time because it's not noted as in they're not willing to work. They'll train every day, but it's more noted in the lack of excitement. They're actually like a lot of, you know, it's like, oh, I don't know if I'm really looking forward to it. I don't understand. I mentally want to do it. Like, I'm so motivated, but I'm just finding it a little bit like I'm just not excited. So to me, that's not natural. That's not really the right place to be. I think when people have had injuries and breaks and then forced things, they come back and they're like, oh, I just feel like I want to play. It, like, just feel like, you know, so it's a tricky balance, isn't it? Because for sports people, it is, because obviously that is their life to keep going and keep winning. But I suppose if that's, you know, that goes with the territory, to be fair. You know, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen type thing in sport. You know, you're going to get your prizes, you're going to get your rewards. It's be like the Premier League, any sports, they're all pushing, and you've entered into that particular jungle where you would expect burnout in a way, because you're all, it's who's going to break first. But if that's normal life, you know, if that's you competing with your neighbors, your friends on Facebook, social media, Instagram, all these things, if that's you constantly competing with people, but putting the pressure on yourself to keep raising it, if that's all the time with your kids, your holidays, your food, your PR, everything, your cars, you're holding yourself to that standard all the time in all them areas, I mean, that's burnout for people who don't even really need to go near it.
I speak to a lot of people now who are, and they will freely use the term burnout. It's like a thing, and it's like they're really conscious of it. I was speaking to someone earlier in the week and I actually said to them, I was like, look, in your role that you're doing, and they're obviously feeling burnt out and they're just like, it's just getting on top of me. I'm struggling with this. And I was just saying, like, well, here's a question. Out of your weekly working week, what percentage is done on the actual, like, just the nuts and bolts of your job that the stuff you need to do to basically do your job well? And what percentage is just performative? And they're like, what do you mean performative? I was like, well, how much of this stuff do you do? It's not the part of the work. It's just like you're doing it to either look busy like show face, like, you know, just like status, all that kind of stuff. And they were like 30%, like 30% max is like just my day-to-day work that I need to get done. And if I do that in a week, I'm doing well. Like my boss is happy, like stuff's going well. I'm like performing at a high level. And they were like, shit, yeah, like 70%, like the number of meetings and just like stuff that's like, it's not needed at all. And it's like, that's the stuff that's doing my head in. Like, I'm trying to keep up with this game, this performance that's nothing to do with the actual performing of your role. Mm. And that's part of this, isn't it? It's part of the hand thing that is seen of like, yeah, you can't just do your work and then sit still and chill and just like eat, like, you know, like have some nice leisure time and just, it's like, no, if you've got spare minutes in your day, that means you're not good enough, you're not working hard enough, you're not improving enough. Mm. So you've got to maximize it. And it just dropped for them then, and you're like, yeah, so much of my week I'm just filling time with like bullshit to look busy and like show face and that, and it's nothing to do with my actual role. In fact, it's making that 30% worse because I'm just not as on it as much because I'm tired from all this other shit that's going on.
When I did that thing we did on hand with the group, I liked the bit where it's you put up where he'd said in the Burnout Society, we are now story sellers.
Yeah, story sellers instead of storytellers.
Yeah, we've always been storytellers and we like a narrative, and this is me and where I get my meaning from. I come from here and, you know, and got two kids and I have a dog and I play this and I've got, you know, I used to, you know, you kind of just say your story, but no, that's not good enough. You've got to be a story seller now. You're convincing yourself and everybody else that you're this thing. You are your own commodity. What I thought about that was like when you said almost it had gone from biology to psychology as well, didn't he? So like you use your body, you produce it with your hands and your legs and all this in manual labor a lot of the time, and you do, or you cut hair and you plant trees or you know all these physical things that you might actually build or construct. Whereas because a lot of work now is psychological and it's and selling ideas, you know, I know, for example, just looking at my little world again, you know, in one sport, the amount of our ex-players and who didn't really make it, you know what I mean, with their bodies in a way, like they were pro, but they might not have gone, you know, or it's some, then they suddenly become like coaching experts and psychology experts and they're selling information and putting opinions out there, and then they get a blog going and they're like living off this sort of, they're not actually doing anything or producing anything, they're just perpetuating information and selling themselves as experts and ex-pro, I can help you with. And coaching's a lot like that, isn't it? They're like, you're just telling people stuff. You're not actually got anything in your hands at the end of it. But when they were playing the sport, they were actually using their bodies and you could see shots and you could see, you know, the accumulative training and the rallies produced what you saw game, you know. But now it's just none of that, it's just talk. But it's like that itself brings its own problems because you're not using your body. So you when your body gets tired, it has a natural way of resetting. You go to sleep or it can't carry on, but your brain knows no bounds, so you're always pinging in your head.
And it's like we were saying earlier though, sleep isn't what it should be for. Rest, recuperate, right, recharge for the next day. Sleep even is like, that's not off limits. Even your sleep now has to be optimized, like you said, with like the sleep trackers and all, you know, like the everything about your sleep environment. It's like the science of this and like blue light and blah, blah, blah. And I've been there and done it myself. Like I've got caught up in all that in the past. But even that, it's like Hans saying, look, no minute of your day is free from this self-improvement achievement thing. Even sleep. He's like, friggin' hell, come on. Even sleep. You can't just sleep.
It's selling. Yeah, even sleep. It's like, because if I tell people that I've got my sleep sorted out because I'm doing this, check this out. It's like you almost want everyone to follow you and do it because then it's like normal. It's normal that I need an app and I need to read a book about how to sleep. It's normal that there's a sleep expert. It's normal that there's this. It's normal because, like, and now I'm optimizing my sleep. So I'm, and that's not just casual chat, is it? Like, oh, I had a good night's sleep. Oh, I didn't sleep well last night. A bit tired. I'll probably sleep well tonight. That's selling. It's the next level. You become story sellers. You're making money and kudos and status with your friends and everyone around from telling them boring stuff. that people now think is valuable. So you get like, you get football pundits and you get, it's everywhere, isn't it? It's like you get bloggers on how to do shopping or how to do makeup and how to do every little tiny little niche that hasn't been hit on in every area. I suppose there's someone expert behind it selling a story about it, even like a normal life now. I bumped into my dad the other day, we in town, we're chatting, and like, so I've just read a book about a guy he used to work with. This guy's written a story about his life, how he went from zero to hero, and now he helps out kids at school who aren't motivated. I'm just like, I know this guy, just a normal guy who was a bit of a waster and lazy. He's turned his experience into a, he sold it. And now he's selling like, I was not good at school. Nah, then I would now look at me. I was just like you. And it was never like that. It was just like the rest of us. He's just a bit lazy and we all knew him and he was a bit of a blagger. And I'm like, oh my God. So he's not a storyteller that we knew him as. He used to tell stories all day and quite funny and a lovely lad. Now he's actually selling that story as his business, and it's like, that's another layer. That's another layer of self-importance, you know. So if that's going on in your head all the time, but then that's what society's done. I get it. That's what Han's saying. Make money, make profit out of these small things. You can make money out of anything.
Well, that's part of the... You mentioned Sartre earlier when we did the Bad Faith episode and how people drop into bad faith and just, you know, inauthenticity, performing a role, all that stuff. This is a massive part of that, isn't it, where... It's like you're not telling it how it is. So when people are posting on Instagram and social media and stuff, it's always this like really manipulated, like fake story narrative that people are. So they're not telling the story in that sense. They're selling you a version of their life that they want you to believe, that makes you feel about them in a certain way that probably isn't how they actually are. And he's also like, look, when you're not producing stories to sell, then all you're doing is consuming other people's stories. So it's just like this merry-go-round of bullshit in a way, of people faking it until they make it. And it's all this, like you say, maybe they bring in some of the, oh, here's my sleep tracker from last night, and here's a picture of my meal that I had for breakfast. Look what I'm eating now. It's got this amount of protein in it. I amazing. And it's all that. Yeah. It's all part of that bigger story that they're trying to convince you of.
Well, a friend of mine said to me years ago, everyone's turning into their own PR, the PR in their own life all the time. And he runs a massive marketing company. So this guy's actually built that company and employs loads of staff, and it's real. You can go to his offices and see the work that's going on, and the flyers and the marketing, you know. So even though he's in that area, you can see it's real. But he said everyone's like got this, 3-mile jog, oat milk this, vegan that, you know, oh, look at us, you know, and even a night out. If you don't get likes on your night out, was that a good night out then because no one liked it? Or it's so subtle, but everyone's story selling all the time, aren't they? That you might say, oh, it's innocent, but it crosses the line. Tell me why you don't like LinkedIn.
Oh, just because it's the epitome of all this stuff, I think. It is. It just feels so performative, so fake, so inauthentic. It's people saying stuff that everyone knows it's sort of bullshit. There might be little snippets of truth in it, but they'll blow something up to make it into a post, and then it's the way they're structured in a certain way to get engagement and clicks. And it's just like, I go on, I can't believe people just don't say this is bollocks. It's like, that didn't happen really, did it? No one ever comments that. It's always this, like Han was saying this, like, oh no, you mustn't be negative. You must all be optimistic. You must big each other up, pat each other on the back, like each other's stuff. Great job, Danny. Well done. That sounds amazing. Can't wait to hear more. Let's get a coffee on next week. And it's like, I guarantee you've never met for a coffee. You're just saying that to look like you're the optimistic. Like, it's just this self-fulfilling thing. And it's all like, he talks about this rise of positivity, doesn't it, that we've mentioned. And it's, that's just all part of it. Like, yeah, you must never be the one who's like, being real and just saying it how it is. You've got to like just play the game. And I just feel like everyone knows that's the game that's going on, but no one calls it out on LinkedIn. Just a bit of a weird place. And I think it's the epitome of Han's thing, like a place where people go just to sell the story of their career. And I don't know, like, I mean, I don't genuinely, how many people get jobs off LinkedIn? I don't know. I don't know if it's a thing. Like, do you generally get approached? So, I've been looking at your LinkedIn profile. I've got a role for you. Maybe it does happen a little bit. I don't know. But I don't get the impression for the majority of people, because everyone's looking at it going, yeah, that's bollocks. I wonder what the truth was. And I think, like you just mentioned about everyone being their own PR thing, that is the achievement subject to a T, isn't it? You've got to PR your life. You can't just be normal. You can't just plod along and just like the builders, like you just plod along, just like just live a nice, like happy, normal life. Yeah, I do a bit, sleep well at night because I worked hard all day, and then I go again the next day, and that's it. It's like, no, you can't do that. You've got to PR it. You've got to make it look amazing so everyone else wants to do that as well. When he talks about positivity, just to quickly go back to, you know, those mental maladies, the modern mental maladies, ADHD, that stuff. He makes quite a nice link, I think, where he talks about even they're not no longer negative anymore, in that, like, say you get a virus, it comes from outside, doesn't it? So your immune system is attacked from something outside of you, and it's like coming in and attacking you.
Yeah.
And that he saw that as, again, like a negative thing. Whereas now, it's internal, so it's like a positive thing. So all of these like mental maladies, they're not infection. He calls them infarction, which is like this internal thing which comes from this excessive positivity. So yeah, all that's just in the mix there. You're not being attacked by the foreign anymore. You're like the cause of your own flipping diseases. Like you're almost you're infarcting yourself with these things that are coming from inside. And then you go, oh God, I've got depression now, or I've got bipolar, or oh yeah, I've got ADHD, me. And Han just like, maybe there's a little bit of that, but I think it's just all this like mad culture that we're in now, that you're having to be this particular way.
Well, it's fertile soil if you're predisposed that way anyway, isn't it? It at least minimum is it's fertile, in that it's in the ether, and it's also like back into your brain, catch up, back into your brain, fix it, back into your brain, why are you sad, back into your brain, why are you overweight, why are you not fit, why aren't you happy all the time, why aren't you as good as them, what are you doing about it? So it's like, you can understand if you're a bit sort of that way mentally anyway, and you are neurodivergent or whatever they say, then it's only fertile soil to make it just go nuts, isn't it? Because it's like, crack it, like I'm not in anywhere that's calm, that's like going, to be honest, just, we know you're a bit different, but just chill, like no one's saying anything about anything, don't, you're not supposed to be that good or anything. So, you know, you could criticize Han and say, well, this is just, you know, you're just giving everyone an excuse to just switch off and do nothing and just be lazy, and what's wrong with achievement, and what's wrong with fake it till you make it and going up and all that. But then again, I just go back to like, yeah, some people are probably cut out for that. But when the whole society is making that the base standard, you know, then you're going to get sucked along by that flow and magnetization of what your whole culture's doing. And to not do it, it takes a lot of a stronger character to be awake and to go, you know what, my business, I'm ending it there, and I'm going to come this, or I'm going to cut it down, I'm going to trim it back, I'm not bothered, I'm going to come in off social media, I'm going to chill out, I'm going to live with my own thoughts, I'm not going to put a war on boredom, I'm going to like sit with my boredom for some times. And I think, you know, like one line that he said, again, another one which was a good one, that he said there's an attitude as well, like by kind of having to keep up with the pace of positive life, and you know, and you should have things, and you should be moving on, and you're individuals, and you deserve stuff. Like you don't be a victim. Like, you know, that's just, you're just an old socialite, lazy. Like, don't be a victim. He said that there's like an abolished scarcity today for a slavery tomorrow, which I was like, wow, that's like, no, I've got to have my drinks. I've got to work. I've got to have the teeth, the hair. I've got to have the boobs. I've got to have the, you know, the tan. I've got to have the car. I've got to have the look. I've got to I've got to propel this story. And if that costs me money and credit cards and things, well, I need that. It's, if you don't keep up, you're dead anyway. So in terms of every social standards and every, so I've got to keep that up. So there's a pressure there. But the slavery is, well, I've got a £40,000 a year job, but I've got like a £300,000 mortgage. And then, well, we need the holiday, and we need the kettle, the new kettle. Kitchen needs to be extended, and therefore I need the job title, and I need the status from the job title. And then I almost need the narrative and the story of, oh man, I'm so busy, I can't catch my tail. Like, but I'm getting down to the gym doing microwave fitness at 6 a.m. every day. I've seen David Lloyd change like that, where I go and play squash, because I've gone the other way. I've gone more into to balance after the hectic career, and just watch a lot of things, you know, which is the choices I've tried to make, which has been like not being way less ambitious, staying in the same, you know, house, and not having to do all those things and focusing on different things. I'm not saying I've opted out of the burnout society, but I've definitely, through doing my studies and what makes me tick and being self-aware, I knew I have to have a certain slow pace for me. And I think ultimately everyone has to try and get to that themselves. But I see it at the club, you know, I see young people, they're all fit, they've all got the gear on, they all look really good looking, they're in the gym early, then I'm coming in as they're going out high as a kite from the endorphins, and they've got the fitness in the bank, and they're on their phones, and they've all got good cars, and you're like, wow, I only used to see the pro footballers 20 years ago from Bolton Wanderers doing this. Now everyone looks like they're a pro footballer and they're bouncing around and they're all got it together. But yet at the same time, you in one level you go, bloody, these people are amazing. Like, genuinely, I'm impressed. I'm like, wow. You think, gosh, I'm a bit old. I'm slowing down. And maybe there is a bit of that. You're getting older and you naturally want to be a bit slower. But I still see some. That age is creeping up. I see 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, some 50-year-olds keeping that standard. And it's like, well, what's got to give? Apparently antidepressants and mental well-being and all these things are more problematic, and stress and happiness hasn't necessarily gone up and all. So it doesn't always correlate, does it? Some people will be coping fine. Some people will be just thriving because that's just how they are. And they'll have a philosophy of, you know, why not? Like, go for it. Goals, burn fast, you know, whatever. But I just wonder, a lot of it is show. I don't know what's necessarily going on underneath. And in my experience of talking to a lot of people and athletes, once you get into a conversation where you can talk to someone and it's not necessarily transactional and they open up to you a little bit, which people tend to do when you're calm, they'll say a few things and then you go, oh my God, I've no idea. Like, you're struggling. You've got anxiety. You see, no one would know. It looks phenomenal. You've got muscles, you're doing triathlons, you're always buzzing, you're always in good restaurants, you're good nights out, you look kind of well in a way, you're positive, but you're feeling burnt out, what's the point? And it's just like what I said earlier, but I'd expect that with pro athletes, because they're at tournament after tournament after tournament, and they're always on show and the results matter. So I get it with athletes. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry, but you are going to get burnt out because it's relentless. It's like, that's part of being a pro athlete. It takes a special kind of character to really keep grinding the way up. If you're super mega, mega talented and you're that good, that's a little bit of a free pass. You're just bloody lucky because it doesn't take a lot out of you and you're that good. But if you're the one, you know, if you're pushing it and pushing it and pushing it all the time just to sort of keep in the fight, you're going to get burnt out. But normal people in everyday life, do you really need to keep that mental pace up beyond your basic needs of food for the kids? And, you know, it's tricky, isn't it? It's tricky.
Yeah, this is what he's pointing out in the book in many ways. This is just quite normal now for people to be like this and therefore feel things like burnout. Like, it's incredible now, even, you think 20 years ago, the amount of people now who will openly, it's almost part of the project that they are now, or the story they are selling you. It's kind of got to the point now where, like, being in therapy is like a tick on the story selling. It's like, that's a positive thing now. Yeah, I'm working on myself. I'm trying to iron out some issues. I'm open that I'm depressed. I'm open that I've got these like mental maladies. I'm open about being in therapy and like having counseling and all these sorts of things. And that used to be really rare even 20 years ago. Now it's just like, yeah, like that's just part of the whole thing that Hans say. One of the quotes he says I quite like, it says, the complaint of the depressive individual, nothing is possible, can only occur in a society that thinks nothing is impossible. And he's sort of saying, like, if you think back through time, not many societies, like, depression just wasn't a thing, because you knew your place, you were given a certain lot,
yeah.
You maybe had a certain level in the social structure,
yeah.
The traditions were this, the options were that, and you were just happy enough doing what you could do within reason. That was like the chips you were dealt. People, Lenny was saying, they didn't really have such a thing as depression, whereas now,
yeah,
people are saying, well, you can do anything. You can be anything you want to be. And especially younger people, are looking around going, well, canal, I don't really know what I want to be. There's so much choice. And he's like, that's where depression and things come in, because you are sold that message. Now, I know you were saying about like your lifestyle, and I'm the same. Like, my lifestyle's really, I kind of going in the opposite direction to the rat race, let's be honest. Like, both of us now, really, we're pretty settled. Like, you know, we're not hunting particular success and money and those things anymore. And it's fair to say Han isn't either. I mean, he's open. In the few interviews he has done, he talks about he spends most of his time in his garden playing his piano. He openly admits he writes maybe 3 sentences a day. He's not like obsessed with his writing and his work and things. He's just like 3 or 4 sentences, sleeps a lot during the day, potters around a bit at night when everyone else is asleep. So he's sort of living the lifestyle he tries to not necessarily promote, but he's walking his talk in many ways. And that is very, very tough. Because I think there is an aspect of, yeah, it's all right saying that once you've got a bit of money behind you and you've had a bit of success and you've got a bit of status and you can pick and choose your work and that sort of thing. I saw them in yesterday on, I think it was on Twitter, this young lad who seemed to be in like Miami Beach area, but he was going around, and if he saw somebody who looked pretty old, he goes up to them with his microphone and he's just like interviewing them, like, you know, what are your regrets in life? You know, what do you wish you'd done? What do you wish you'd said to people? And they're all in their 80s, 90s. Mm. Looking good. They've obviously got money because they're on Miami Beach and they're successful. And he's promoting it, the message that they all say, oh yeah, don't worry too much about money. It's not important. It's much more about your relationships and time spent with family. The classic stuff you would imagine. And you watch it and the message is supposed to make you think, don't chase money, don't do all that. But you're like, it's all right saying that when you're retired and you've made your money. Mm. But you couldn't possibly say that if you're 21. And it's like, friggin' hell, I'm going to buy a house in this current day and age and things. So I think I'm massively on board with him. 90% of what he says I really like and I'm into. I just think there is a bit of, yeah, but it is kind of tough. If you haven't got a bit of hustle about you these days, you are going to struggle, because a lot of the old school traditional things just aren't there anymore for people, are they?
Yeah, and there's no blame attached here. It's like the Adam Curtis stuff. It's observational. It's almost like society observation, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, we were saying earlier that you move through time and history is happening now. You'll look back on it and go, oh, do you remember the 80s? Remember the 60s, the 50s and that? But you remember the post-COVID bits, you know. COVID was interesting because in a way, for a bit, for most people, all the rules were off. You weren't supposed, it was almost like you're not supposed to be achieving for at least 3 weeks, just sit at home. And no one knew what they were doing. And
people got paid to sit at home, didn't they? It was like, yeah, furlough, don't you come into work. We'll pay you to be at home.
There was a natural detox of that. And then even in America, there was the big leave or something they called it, where people left the jobs because they'd almost been given back the feeling of how to handle boredom and, you know, a tough training schedule. And obviously for a lot of families and a lot of people, tricky times, you know, and how do you do that? But even that, managing to somehow get through the days without nursery and all these other things and projects, you know, being at home. So a bit of heaven and hell, but the net effect maybe being this, like, you don't have to be, maybe it gave you an excuse, like sometimes bank holidays or Christmas time, maybe it's the excuse, like all rules are off. And I know not for everyone, because they say you should work twice as hard on Christmas Day now, don't they? If you want to win all that stuff. But basically your birthday or something, it's just a bit of, well, it's your birthday, just relax. You don't have to achieve today. Oh, right, good. And you feel it. You can feel that. Oh, no blame here. No guilt. No, if I eat 10 chocolate bars and just sit around, no guilt and so on. So there's the subman, isn't there? There's the Simone de Beauvoir's subman, which is someone who does that constantly and never gets off their arse, which isn't great. But then there's the ultimate, like, serious achiever person that she said that just throws the cell into that. And I suppose this modern society is telling you, yeah, good, good, keep going. Yeah, that's really good. You know, stay on the pace. I have a big dilemma with young people who look me up to help them with squash and coaching. So in my line of work, I'm sure this is across all industries. And I know that they're not going to make money from it. They're never going to pay the tax man. So they'll call themselves professional, but they just can't do it. They can't play. But every book, every other coach, every psychology, everyone selling something is saying you can. And there's a real sort of moral ethical thing going on, right? Who am I to say you can't, because I don't know for a fact. And you always have one, don't you, counter example out of 20,000 that did it. And then you're like, God, like, no one thought they would have ever done anything, and they did. So, like, they keep the dream going for Huntley, and then they read the stories. And so you have this dilemma, well, do you bail out on them and tell them straight, I think you're wasting your time and you'll never do this ever, which can nowadays cause all sorts of harm. And, you know, and because if they are in that mode of, I can be anything, and you say that and they respect you, it can really shatter their worldview, can really upset them. So do you be cruel to be kind, but it might be cruel to be crueler, not cruel to be kind. So you've got to be careful, haven't you, when you're waking people up who are sort of going on this pace. I suppose what I've learned is you just sort of like, you help, but you just chip away. It's not like banality. I know, like, you know, you don't just like let it happen in front of your eyes. That banality of evil thing where you just go, oh, I'll just join in and like, I won't say anything. You know, I'm not going to take the responsibility to be the one to make a prediction. But I do have this thing all the time with certain players. And I just think, well, it's not for me to live your life. But I think I've worked with 7 or 8 players over the years, and they were never, ever going to make money from the game. They were deluded, really. But in their minds, they were like, I'm literally like 6 months of proper training and psychological help of being top 20, top 15 in the world. And you're like, you're not. Because you don't know how good them people are naturally. Like, why would you know? And I can only presume that that's been fueled by coaches and parents and school teachers saying, dream big, you can be anything.
Yeah.
Aim for the moon and you'll at least, aim for the stars, you'll at least land on the moon. You know, all them types of positive things. And I'm not so sure, like you say, it's sometimes quite nice to just go, I wasn't good enough. It's nice when some of your mates who thought they could have been pro footballers and things and then one day when they're 24, they go 26, 20, whatever, they go, I couldn't have been a pro footballer. I was nowhere near good enough when I look back. Instead of carrying on that guilt that they did something wrong. You know, with kids in academies and getting coached and positive messages and you can like Phil Foden and you can be this and all them coaches selling dreams and like we know the rates of who make it, but if you're not allowed to say you just weren't good enough and the player takes that to heart and goes, well, I should have got round that. There's no such thing as not good enough. Like, it's my fault, or I'm angry at them because I could have been good enough and they stopped me and I'll never forgive them. Like, I was always good at most sports I did as a kid, but I was soft as anything. There's no aggression in me. I was useless when it came down to it. You know what I mean? At that age, it's easy looking back now and going, oh, he could have. But it was kind of nice to kind of go, I couldn't have done that. I was soft. I was limited. It was impossible for me. I was limited. That can be a mentally better way than going,
yeah,
well, my dad didn't push me enough. And if I'd have gone to karate training and boxing, I'd have got harder and then I'd have won. And then we could have done this. And you know, I just think there's all nowadays modern life is no, you could have got around that. You could have fixed this. It's your fault. Do you know what I mean? With a lot of these people that are trying to get.
I think that's a great summing up of what Han's saying, basically. That's the crux of his message. And if you are that person, like you said, who does maybe go, hang on, are you sure? Like, even if you don't say as much as, nah, I don't think you can do that, even if you just question it, perhaps. You can quickly get painted as being pessimistic, miserable, kind of selfish, you're negative. That society will quickly paint you in that way. And often it's not, you're just being realistic more than anything. Like, it's a bit of realism, isn't it? Maybe it is pragmatism as well. I'm just being pragmatic and real. Like, are you sure? Yeah, like, do you genuinely think this? And it's, you can get shot down if you're that person. But yeah, I think that is the world we're in that Han was painting. And he's just, that book's a dead short, quick book to read. I think it's a good way to just wake yourself up a little bit, isn't it? And go, hang on, is this me a little bit? Now, if you think of solutions, some of his he doesn't give you anything in the burnout society. There's no, Han is not a man of, all right, so this is the thing, so this is what you should do. He's just like, this is what it's like. See you later. I'm going to go chill in my garden for a bit and play my piano. So he doesn't really give you anything to work with. But in his later books, the favorite one I read of his was called Vita Contemplativa. And basically that's where he's saying, he's like, look, come on, you need to start creating a world where you have interruptions. He calls them between times. So rather than just being on the go all the time, treadmill, like just banging from day to day to day, you've got to physically create those moments of just not doing anything. And he's big on like, look, you can't equate inactivity with laziness. He's almost like it's the exact opposite. Like, to be to be creative and have ideas and all those sorts of things. Like, you need boredom, you need inactivity and just contemplating life. You need space for that. So he talks about, you know, like going for a walk without a destination in mind, just pottering, just wandering, chilling, all those things. He's like, they're really like important parts of being healthy, being a healthy human being. One of his phrases he talks about is ceremonious inactivity. So exactly that, like give yourself those moments of like, I've got nothing in my diary, I don't know, I've got nothing to do today, not got no schedule, and just see what happens. Just let yourself be inactive, and that's where you get this, that's where he saw true happiness lying. That's the only place you're ever going to get true happiness, where you've got freedom from purpose and usefulness. Instead of trying to maximize every moment, it's like, no, just like, just be inactive, just chill and let your attention like just go where it goes instead of it being like taken up all the time. And even that, they're not really like practical things. He's just saying, look, this is what we need more of. We need more inactivity. We need more contemplation. Get off that rat race, that treadmill of positivity, selling your story constantly being positive, all that stuff. It's not going to end well.
Well, spontaneity. Having room for spontaneous things.
Yeah, that can only come from being inactive. You can't be spontaneous if you're always busy, can you?
Yeah, gaps. And not, I see athletes, they go, I'm going to do a rest day. You know, I'm going to have 2 weeks holiday to recharge so I can win. Right? All right. Even athletes, you can argue, all right, they can't escape the ultimately, is this going to make me win? But I think a lot of people do that now as well. I'm going to have a nap. So it's not proper in between spontaneous. It's, I'll do that if it will make me more creative. I will do that if I get a recharge and then I can go and hammer it at work. So even that becomes functional. I'm talking about the sort of stuff where people are a bit edgy and frightened because they're itchy and they've got nothing to do. It's like a night out, you know, a spontaneous night out. It used to be some of the best nights out, didn't it? Because there's no expectations on it or plans, or it wasn't a thing you were ticking off with your friends because you had a spur night and you'd planned it in. Every Christmas, isn't it? Oh, we must see each other more. We must come round. No one pops in or just rings up. It's all got to be a date in the diary, hasn't it? Or a, you know, why aren't someone, I have loads of weekends where if someone just rang me and went, fancy going for a bit, I could go. But no one ever does it. I know I'm shit company, but but it just pops round in the car and goes, we just knocked on. It's like, oh, what are you doing? We haven't got half an hour just for you. Do you not know how busy we are? You know, like, oh, this is I'm chilling. I am chilling. I'm chillaxing, mate. Why have you just come and interrupted my chillaxing time? I need this because I'm so functional. There's just no, like, I suppose in Mediterranean countries they still do it, don't they? And, you know, where it's just a lot more laid back in maybe some of the Greek islands. I don't know. They're not the only last place left. But the other thing, to finish, rituals. I do think rituals are good because although they're organized and they're ceremonious and they're sort of repeated, there's no other reason to do it but for the ritual. It's the purple we were talking about last episode. So you sit at the dinner table, like, or you go for a walk at that time, or you know you always do this thing that's a ritual, and it's like a leveler. It's like, this ritual is more important than you and your blooming positive psychology. Just get it done. So that's another type of way of taking the psychological pressure off yourself, because it's like, there's something bigger than me that I have to sacrifice myself for. I think group rituals and things, but I think there's a lot in that, what he was saying, and that's maybe something tied into the purple. In terms of spiral dynamics, he has a big attack on modern orange, does he? Irrational.
Yeah, it's, the whole thing is that.
But he almost says, I want you to all go back a bit more to purple and tribal and beige survival. Go descend back down the colours, if anyone listened to the last podcast. So maybe that's something we can talk about next time if we bring it back up. Like the positivity of rituals, what he talks about.
You bang on about nights out. New Year's Eve is always the shittest night out. Wasn't it though? Because it was so planned. It was like, it was. Oh no, you must have a good night tonight. And it's like, often you'd be maybe planning stuff weeks in advance, and it just be like, and then you're there, you're like, oh, it's just a bit like, where's like some of the best nights ever? No, like I used to say to them, like those nights out, they were like a mini lifetime. You know, where, like, you know, if you ever like get on an old school all day, you maybe get on the like 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, you're on it. And then you just like end up anywhere, like just like in mental, like, and it, like, it feels like a lifetime,
yeah, it's a story.
In maybe 12 hours. Like, yeah. So much can happen in that,
yeah,
time.
Brilliant, yeah.
And it's just spontaneous, isn't it? There's no plan. And I suppose in itself can be quite ritualistic.
Yeah. Well, like, I think you're letting go. You're letting go in a carefree way. And no matter what happens, you're sort of trusting to the flow. You're not just into the flow of the river or whatever it's taking you. I don't know. I've no plan. Instead of it being designed to the letter. And even in sports coaching, that was what my old mentor used to talk a lot about. Everything has become what he called rote. Everything's got to be a plan and a detail and a minute by minute lesson plan. It's like, whatever happened to the flow of a lesson, where it led itself. So there's even all that's tied in, isn't it? You know, and enjoyment and what's boring. And so it's definitely out there, isn't it? It's a psychological phenomenon that's going on a lot more than ever.
I used to say that when I was in academia, like, and you say you were delivering a module and you had to plan your module, like your learning outcomes and blah blah blah, like 6 months, a year before the students would even start it, and you're like, how are you man enough what they're gonna learn a year in advance of them? Like, I'm like, I don't know what they're gonna learn. Like, I could maybe like think in my head what I want them to learn, but it doesn't mean they're gonna learn that. Like, they could learn anything in that time. And that's, I suppose, that's like a modern, like, it sums up that thing of everything has to be planned. And it's like, yeah, there's very little spontaneity now. Like, we couldn't have a night out like that anymore. You couldn't do it.
No,
a full on, like, because you can't, like, you've got responsibilities, you've got, it's just like, we could not go out. I couldn't meet you at 3 o'clock this afternoon for a pint and then end up in a different city in like 24 hours later, we're still ending up somewhere doing something. You couldn't do it. Mm. Life just wouldn't let you do it. So no. Yeah, I do miss those days a little bit, I must admit. Let's end with a bit of Mickey Flanagan telling us how we can do less.
Met a girl, very nice girl, 10 years ago. Knew it was going to work out. We were meant for each other. The planets aligned. Everything started to work out. And I'll tell you why it's worked out. She likes multitasking and I like doing fuck all. And I mean proper fuck all as well. Old school fuck all. Not your teenage chillaxing. Come here, we is chillaxing, guy. They don't know their ball. I mean, old school fuck all, I'll talk you through it. There are young people in this room, never witnessed it. You lay on the settee like that in a slightly darkened room and you just stare at the ceiling. That's it. There's no more to do. Stare. Sometimes I ain't even thinking. I'm just being. Might become unbearably light. Now, if you're with a woman who cares about you, she'll tolerate a lot of this time, but sometimes things will come up on a Saturday, she'll get a little bit, she'll look at you over the breakfast table, she'll say, look, this is not going to be another wasted day. And you slip off. Try and do fuck all. And she comes and finds you. What you doing in there? You doing fuck all in there? I'm doing 3 things out here. If I've got to stop you doing fuck all, that's 4. That's too many even for me. Now, come on. We've got to purchase something. So, a man's got to get slippery, double slippery. Try and carve out a few times in his life when he can do proper fuck all. I'll tell you mine. Watching a kettle boil. That's lovely by the kettle, yeah. Now, your mum will tell you as a child, oh, a watch kettle never boils. It does, don't worry about that. Sometimes too quickly for my liking.
When we dance, the journey itself is the point. When we play music, you will simply become completely absorbed in sound. And therefore you will find yourself living in an eternal now in which there is no past and there is no future and there is no thing called difference between yourself and the world of nature outside you. This is red. This is green. This is something. This is nothing, this is solid, this is space. Between yourself and the world of nature outside you.